Well, I really desire an interest in your prayers this morning. Appreciate Sister Sheila praying for us specifically. Before we're done, you may want to retitle the message, The Cough. I don't know, but I'd like for us to consider this question that probably somebody has suggested to you, or the enemy has, if a person hasn't. Where's the proof? And we live today is a week before what we call Christmas. And we live in an age where everywhere we turn, there is concentrated efforts to eliminate Christ out of everything. And people are very contentious. People that have an agenda, we used to think, was in the vast minority. And I'm not so sure whether they're in the vast minority today or not. Because even if they are, they've had a tremendous effect on us as a nation. We've had a president that said we're no longer a Christian nation. We're a nation of many religions. I've lived to see the age where Christmas, although I'm not in fellowship with Catholicism, that it's Christ's Mass, that's where we get the word Christmas. I'm very thankful for a national holiday, and there's people that want to replace the word Christ with an X, and I think it's just it's more than an excuse to shorten a long word. They want to eliminate Christ. So, thinking about what do we give people for proof that Christ really was and really is. I listened to a message yesterday afternoon or evening. Brother Mark Sammons. And the title of the message, I think it's one Rodney has just uploaded recently, was called Your Calling, Call to Be Saints. And one of the things that he stressed in there was how important it is for us to be an example right where we live. In our families, in our neighborhoods, in the atmosphere, you know, our surroundings. He said, who we are under pressure is who we really are. And there's a real sincere calling for us to be a saint. We're all called to be a saint in this world. So many times people that want to contest the reality of Christ want to start sifting through some evidence, don't they? Brother Salmon said in the message that the most effective message he felt like that the Lord had ever used him to be able to deliver was of what Jesus had done for him. He knows what he was like to be a miserable old sinner man and how that the Lord really changed him. And we've heard testimonies like that in this congregation, and I'll tell you, it thrills my heart every time I hear it. The most effective thing that he could say was to preach a message about the deliverance that Christ made. Well, A lot of people today want to attribute their change and their improvement to self-improvement. And they've got a hold of some things, and there's so many books written about self-improvement that it'd probably fill a landfill about people having tidbits on how to change yourself. And the simple truth of it is the most successful change that we can have that is long-lasting is to get an experience with the Lord. And that's the testimony that Brother Salmon's had. That's the testimony that we have here today. But we face a world out there that says, that wants to tell us there is no God, there is no Christ. There was no Christ. That was just a story. That was a myth. It didn't really happen. We get a long ways away from an event, and it seems like it's hard to prove, doesn't it? I can tell you how what my grandfather had to do to take care of his car and get it to start. And it's so far away from what you and I experience today that it's hard for you to believe it. And I really don't have a proof other than what I was told. So the two things he did, especially in the wintertime, and those of us, I mean, my grandfather was in the age of when electric starters and batteries were a new development. And at the best, they didn't work real good. And the cars he had were just fortunate enough to run. They weren't real good. And so in the wintertime, he always had to drain the radiator and drain the block because he didn't have any antifreeze. And I looked up when antifreeze really was first introduced. They said the first time it was ever used in a car, in a new car, was 1926. And it didn't really get popular or used very much until World War II. And I know my mama was a little girl in World War II. And I know that if antifreeze was not a real popular thing, my grandfather surely didn't have it up in the hills of Missouri. And so he had to drain his radiator, drain the block. And we have 5W30 and 0W20 and 10W40 and all that motor oil today. And it helps our engine start when it's cold. And you know, it was the 50s. Before we got multi-grade oil. 1950s, you realize that? Before that, it was just straight weight 30 or 20 or 40 or whatever they put in those old cars. So Grandpa took a pan and drained his oil out of the car. After he shut it off, put a lid over it, and put it in behind the wood stove in the house and kept it warm. So to get the car started to go somewhere, you'd have to go out and pour the oil in it, carry water from the house, pour the water in the engine and in the block, and then, because there's no way the starter was going to start it, you parked it up on a hill and you kicked the stick of wood out from behind the tire and jumped in the seat and you rolled off down the hill, and hopefully when you got to the close to the bottom, you could let out on the clutch and he'll start it. And if get it cleared out and running good enough, you get it back up to the house and load the family up, and you could go to church or go to town or go visit the family for Christmas. And if you stopped for all day, you had to drain it out, take your oil out, put it behind the stove, and wonder at a family gathering how many kettles of oil was sitting behind the stove. And I tell you that, and to you, some of you, you might say, I can't believe that you had to do all of that. Well, that's how they coped, and that's how they made it. And today, when we start telling people about Jesus, they want to begin to deny that he existed because it happened a long time ago in our age, 2,000 years. That's a long time. That's before what we would call ancient history. Ancient history is, I don't know, 1,000 years ago was ancient, isn't it? So this is 2,000 years ago. That's before ancient history. How can you tell me something that happened so long ago? What's the proof? Where's the proof? So I began to thinking about this because I want people to believe that Christmas is important, not because of all of the gifts we give one another, but because Christ came to make a change in men's lives. And the reality of that we can be born again, a new creature, and that it can be different now. So, I had to think of a verse I want to start with over in Proverbs, the first chapter. Proverbs 1 and verse 20. We're going to start and end with the same verse, Lord willing. He says, wisdom crieth without. She uttereth her voice in the streets. Now, there's not much more common or accessible to us than what's in the street. You don't have to have a much of a... If wisdom is just laying in the street, in all the streets, that's the what's being inferred or what's being implied here, is that wisdom is crying without. Just beyond where you're at right now, wisdom is saying, here I am, and it's in the streets. It's just as common as gravel. In our day, we might say as common as blacktop or concrete. Wisdom. The answer. Some of the things that ought to be so clear as a reason that there is a God and that there was a Christ. And, you know, they start looking for maybe a tomb that Jesus was put in after he was crucified, or maybe they've been looking for the manger where he was put. I don't know. Maybe God could have preserved that somehow, but I'm really not banking on that. There's some other facts. There's other proof besides finding a plank off of Noah's Ark. There's other proof that the Bible is true. So I'd like to look at one of the things. Have you ever wondered why we have 7 days in a week? Well, I'll tell you something not to do. Don't Google it. If you type 7 day week into Google, you can read from now on and find so many different ideas and theories about why we have 7 days in a week that you'll be so confused you won't even know macaroni from spaghetti. There are so many ideas of why it is out there. They give you reasons that some of them sound plausible. I read enough to realize I was getting confused, and I said, I'm done. I know why. I know why there's 7 days in a week. But it's not based on the moon's orbit of the earth. It's pretty easy for us to divide the year into months because that's That's how long it takes, 29 and a half days or something like that, for the moon to go around the earth. And the moon cycles, you know, it's pretty easy for us to say, well, it's reasonable to come up with a month, 12 divisions, because the moon goes around the earth 12 times in a year, approximately. It's pretty easy for us to draw a line in the sand and say, well, this is a year because we was here 365 days ago. It's pretty easy for us to define a day because that's how long it takes for the sun or the earth to make a rotation, and we come, you know, the sun is in the same spot now as it was 24 hours ago. It must have been a day. We can call it whatever we want to, but you see the concept? A day. Pretty easy for us to rationalize the time division of a day. It's pretty easy for us to rationalize a month and a year. But a week? Where'd that come from? Kind of arbitrary. It doesn't line up with the moon. It don't line up with the sun. It don't line up with a year. It don't line up with anything. And there's lots of theories about it. Well, I said it don't line up with anything. It lines up with one thing. You know what that was? The creation. We can go back over there and read that in the first chapter of Genesis, and we find that God took 7 days to complete his creation. And the seventh day, it says that he rested. You know why that's important? It's because God loves mankind. And he put an allotment of time in there for mankind to rest and recuperate. Who else would do that except someone that loved you? A God that loved you. So how do we get 7 days in a week? Well, I'm very confident that it's because God set it up that way. It wasn't lined up with the sun. It wasn't lined up with the moon. It wasn't lined up with how long it took the earth to make one rotation, and we divided the earth, the days up into 24 hours in a day. I don't know, maybe we should have done 50 or 20 or something. That's arbitrary too, but 7 days, it's a week. To me, that's proof that creation is true, that the Bible is real. You can go find a lot of other theories, but it's kind of like, you know, there's times that people might say to you, it's plain as the nose on your face. Oh, wisdom is crying in the street. We got 7 days in a week. Where did that come from? Well, in the beginning, God created, and at the end of each day, he said that it was good. And on the seventh day, it says that God rested. And he set something in motion that is still there. And there's people that's been trying to come up with the theories of where did all this come from? And it's in the street. Do you get that point? It's wisdom that's crying in the street. It's right out there. It's just like that asphalt that's right outside the window there. It's right in our face. And we're looking for a tombstone and a something. We're trying to capitalize on a theory that things get better. And when we're faced with all around us, things are getting worse. And things decay and crumble, and species degenerate instead of getting better, don't they? But yet they're trying to promote that somehow we got where we're at because things did exactly the opposite of what we're observing of the things that's in the street. You know, before Christ came, time, as far as years, was accounted for by various means. Patriarchs, age. You know how that's how they come up with the approximate date of the creation, or the, I'm not sure that it really goes to creation, but at least to Adam's time, because the scripture gives Adam's age and then his subsequent ancestors that we would consider patriarchs. And by doing the math, you figure out how many years ago it was. So there's various ways that they kept, you know, they in the 29th year of somebody's reign or the king's reign or this or that, something, some major event happened, and that's how they keep track of time. But somewhere about the time of Christ, we started with zero. The whole world started with zero. I don't know about some pagan nations. They may have not. They still had their own time record keeping. But in my age bracket, the age we live in now, everybody accepts that this year is 2022 years since what? Since, well, it's in the street. You see, wisdom is in the street. 2022 years since Christ was here. When I was in school, I was taught that I lived in the year I graduated in 1984 A.D. And they taught us that A.D. was Latin for Anno Domini, which meant, they taught this in school, in the year of our Lord. That's what the Latin Anno Domini means. And now they want to replace all the A.D.s. You know, if you get your old encyclopedia out and it'll say something like 1530 A.D. or something like that. But if you look it up on Wikipedia, you know what it says? 1530 C.E. It don't mean Christian era either. It means current era. Current era. They're trying to replace all the A.D.s in history with C.E. Trying to get Christ out, you see. And they want to do everything B.C. was before Christ. And they didn't know that they lived 1,000 years before Christ. But we've done the math with all of those other time things. And we say, well, that was at 600 years B.C. We can look in our Old Testament Bible and somebody's done math. And the page I'm on, well, it doesn't say there, but if you go over in the book of Isaiah, somewhere's around 720 B.C. Somebody done the math, come up with that. Isaiah didn't know it was 720 years till Christ come, but that's what we have as a record. And now they call it B.C.E., before current era, trying to take Christ out. You know, they'd move the zero if they could. But what would happen? Wouldn't that be confusion if they moved the zero? If they tried to put the zero back at the time when the pyramids were built. And now we lived in, I don't know when the pyramids were built, but you'd have to add that to our current number, and we might live in 3067 or something like that. I don't know. Wouldn't that mess things up? So we have to leave the zero where it was. We've been working with that same zero for 2022 years. You get me so far? Well, I'm talking about wisdom that's in the street. What have we been counting from? We've been counting from the time that Christ was here. I know that we have a lot of intelligence today, and there's a lot of very sharp people in this world. But are you telling me that our age bracket is those that's living right now is have more knowledge than those that lived in the time that Christ was here? And what would it be like? You know, I remember people standing in the pulpit that my children don't have a clue what it's like. Rodney was asking me the other day, what did Brother Sammons look like? Y'all that's heard him remember what his voice sounded like. So I began to describe what he looked like to him, and I don't know if that helped clear up his mind or not, but you know, when you hear someone's voice, you begin to start putting a picture together. You know, are they tall? Are they short? Are they big and husky? Or are they kind of skinny looking? I don't know. You have all these things that come to your mind. But I knew what they were like, some of them. But there's a generation that I don't know that people have told me about that I appreciate, and I respect their connection with the Lord. One of them was Brother Crawley. Those that were close to me were impacted by Brother Crawley. Didn't know him, didn't live next to him. I say didn't know him. They knew him at camp meeting. They didn't know him in his everyday life. Brother Louis Marler told me, and my children don't know him. Brother Louis told me he used to come in the dining hall saying, singing, "I Found a Refuge," and he would exhort others to mark the perfect man, behold the upright. He said, "Mark me, I'm living all I know and understand." That was his testimony. It's impacted me today. Lord, help me to live in a way that I can say, "Mark me, I'm living to all that I know and understand." He's a man, I don't know. Was he a big man? Was he a little man? All I know is what somebody's told me. Brother Mart, in the message that I listened to, Brother Mart Sammons referred to him. He supposedly said, Brother Crawley said, something to the effect, you want to know what Christ is like, or what it means to be a Christian? Watch me. Now you say that must have been an arrogant person. I think if you would have known him, you would have found that he was one of the most humble men there ever was. But he had a confidence level that I wish we all could have here today. He knew what his experience was with the Lord. He knew where he stood with God. If my grandpa was alive today, in the weather that we had last night, it wouldn't surprise me if he wouldn't say, "Son, don't you think you need to drain the oil out tonight? You're not going to be able to get your car cranked in the morning. Don't you think you ought to park it up on the hill? We're going to have to get a run at it to get it going in the morning." He knew what he was doing back then. He had a reason for that. You know, the people that started counting from zero had a good reason to start counting from zero. It's wisdom that's in the street today. It's crying to us. It's right here staring us in the face, plain as the nose on our face. We've been counting years since what? Since Christ came into this world. It's plain as the nose on my face. What do you want to do if you dig up the basket that Moses was in. Or you find the tomb that Jesus was buried in. Are you going to scrape around and find some DNA and see if it matches up with somebody that's a full-blooded Jew today? Is that the kind of proof you have to have? When it's staring you right in the face, it's just like that blacktop out there on the street. We've been counting years since Jesus came. What else do you need to know? We've been counting weeks in 7 days since creation. And if it wasn't powerful and if it wasn't real, why did everybody adopt it? And if it wasn't true, why didn't they start zero with Alexander the Great? Or why didn't they wait until Hitler come along and start it with zero there? Or I don't care, where you want to start it at. Confucius or whatever his name was over there, they could have started zero with him, couldn't they? But the world didn't. Why didn't they? Because he wasn't Jesus. Jesus was the Son of God. It marked the world, folks. It's staring us in the face. It's wisdom that's crying in the street. And people are just charging past it, saying, I need some proof that God really is. Brother Mark could testify to us today if he come back from eternity, and he could testify to us of the reality of the saving grace of God and what it did for him personally. But if we're not willing to accept the evidence that's staring us in the face, we wouldn't accept that either. Noah and his families were the only ones that escaped the flood. Noah and his three sons and their families, their spouses. The flood made a huge impact on the earth. And men are looking for explanations everywhere. A lot of debates and a lot of theories. I know we got fossils in places that they don't know how they got there. And all the time they're discovering more and more correlation between fossils that they don't think should have lived at the same time. Every once in a while there's something that kind of blips up on the radar. I haven't seen it, but there's supposedly a rock somebody found that had the footprint of a man and the footprint of a dinosaur in the same fossil. I don't know if it's true or not. Kind of hard to find stuff like that because it usually gets suppressed. I'd like to read a little bit to us in Genesis, the 7th chapter. We're talking about where's the proof. You know, I believe that Jesus came to make a difference in my life. And I also believe he came to make a plan for all of mankind, not just the elect. You become the elect when you accept his grace and his mercy. But his mercy is extended to all mankind. It's up to us to accept that. I'd like to go to Genesis chapter 7 and begin reading in verse 11. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, the same day, were all the fountains of the great deep broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened, and the rain was upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights. In the selfsame day entered Noah and Shem and Ham and Japheth, the sons of Noah and Noah's wives. and the three wives of his son with them into the ark. And they and every beast after his kind, and all the cattle after their kind, and every creeping thing that creeped. So we'll go through all the animals that got into the ark, and we get down here, and it says the waters prevailed, verse 19, exceedingly upon the earth, and all the high hills that were under the whole heaven were covered. 15 cubits upward did the waters prevail, and the mountains were covered, and all flesh died that moved upon the earth, both of the fowl and of the cattle, and of the beast and of every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth, and every man, all in whose nostrils was the breath of life, of all that was in the dry land died. All of those that were breathing air died. The fish, all the stuff that lived in the water, survived. Have you ever wondered why they got such weird creatures that live in the water today? Some of them's been around since creation. Every living substance was destroyed which was upon the face of the ground, both the man and the cattle and the creeping things and the fowl of the heaven. Fowl of the heaven, and they were destroyed upon the earth, and Noah only remained alive. And they that were with him in the ark, and the waters prevailed upon the earth 150 days. Long time, almost half a year. The earth was covered by water. The Lord somehow sustained them, helped Noah to be able to prepare. It seems like it was at a time of year when harvest was done, and maybe they gathered in all their whole harvest into the ark. I'm not sure. I do believe God performed a miracle, just like when he fed 5,000 with the three loaves and two small fishes. I believe the Lord made the feed last. I believe he helped Noah to know, and his sons to know how to manage all of the creatures. That was, I don't know if they all went into hibernation. I don't know. The Lord made it happen. All right? But all the stuff that lived on the earth, that breathed air, that didn't get in the boat, died. I'm curious about your understanding of verse 11, where it says, the same day were all the fountains of the great deep broken up, and the windows of heaven were open. The fountains of the deep. I've been to Yellowstone National Park and stood there and at the fence at the scene of Old Faithful, the geyser. And ever so many minutes, Old Faithful comes squirting up out of the ground. Sometimes it's a little higher than others, but it's very consistent as to when it squirts. And I don't know where it comes from. Scientists have got an explanation of how this all happens. But can you imagine water, fire, lava? I don't know, is the volcano still erupting in Hawaii right now? I know they was saying it was just a matter of days before it got down to the highway, and I don't know, maybe it's crossed the highway now. Molten rock coming up out of the ground, spewing out and running down the side of a mountain. I remember when Mount St. Helens blew its top. Heard stories about people that were in the area. Can you imagine the whole earth being in an uproar like that? What do you think happened to climate? We have a lot of people concerned about climate change, but if something like that started, there wouldn't be enough catalytic converters for everything, would there? There wouldn't be enough smog pumps and everything else to keep all that in check. There was a great climate change that happened. I was thinking over here in Genesis 1, I believe it is. He talks about verse 7, I believe. And God made the firmament. I don't know what you think about when you see a firmament. I don't think it's a mattress. It was a, I think he's talking about the atmosphere and the clouds that we see today. It's, he said, God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament, and it was so. And God called the firmament heaven. In the evening and the morning were the second day. But that all changed when the flood came. I don't know exactly what that was like, but it changed. And if there was what some have said, and it appears that maybe the earth was surrounded by a dome of water, don't you know that that would have made our climate a lot more stable? You remember God put Adam and Eve here without any clothes on. The temperature had to be pretty consistent. I kicked my blanket off last night and I woke up cold because it was cold outside and our house wasn't, not that it was cold, it just, it was too cool to not have a blanket on me. I'll just put it that way. And God put a blanket around the earth, I believe. But when the flood came, the atmosphere changed. That firmament he called heaven now didn't have that protective layer. And that scorching hot sun we feel in the summer and that blistering cold wind that we feel in the winter, don't think they had quite that. I don't know, maybe all the land mass was in one spot. But when the flood came and the deep was all broken up and the sun, rain was coming down from that layer of water, if there was such a thing above, all I know is things were different. A lot different. Creatures that were buried got buried in lots of various places. That's why we have fossils in strange places today. Marine life on top of mountains and in the middle of deserts and stuff like that today. It was because God made a major climate change. It's in the street, folks. It's right out there. It's common knowledge, isn't it, that the flood happened? So notice what he says in chapter 8, in verse 21. He said, and the Lord smelled a sweet savor. This is maybe verse 20 I'll start. And Noah builded an altar. This is after he got off of the ark. Unto the Lord, and took of every clean beast and every clean fowl, and offered burnt offerings on the altar. And the Lord smelled a sweet savor. And the Lord said in his heart, I will not again curse the ground any more for man's sake. For the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I again smite any more every living thing as I have done. I'm not going to do this again. I'm not going to sin this type of devastation. This was... a world-changing event. A world-changing event. It changed the atmosphere. It changed our geological makeup. He said, I'm not going to do that again. He says, while the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, and day and night shall not cease. Jeremiah told the people that had been carried off captive, build houses, plant gardens, let your children get married. You go on living even though you're in captivity. Don't quit living. I'm going to tell you today, don't quit living, because we live in the end times of end times. Don't quit. I love my grandchildren, and if time permits, I want my grandchildren to have grandchildren. If time permits, I want us to be able to meet together, even if we got to hide out and meet together. I want us to be able to worship the Lord in spirit and truth. As long as there is life here on this earth, I want to be faithful. But notice the words in verse 22. He said, while the earth remaineth. You know what that tells me? It's not going to be here forever. We can do whatever efforts we want to do for keeping the climate from changing. And we can quit burning gasoline and turn to wind energy and solar energy and start recycling all of our materials and all that stuff. But listen, when God says it's enough, it's going to be enough. The wisdom that cries in the street is God's forces has made dramatic impacts on the earth and on mankind, and people deny it. My mother used to say, talking about a stubborn person, they could argue with a sign and put it up themselves. You know, we can argue with the facts and dig it up ourselves. There are so many answers in the scripture to why there's been giants in the land, why there's been big... we could go on for a long time trying to explain things like why we don't have dinosaurs anymore. You know, they needed a pretty stable environment too. And it was after the flood that God told Noah and his descendants that those creatures out there are good for food. Did you notice that? And if he told man that, he probably told the animals it was okay too. I don't know what all changed. But I know it was dramatically different after the flood. The world went through huge upheaval in a short period of time, 150 days. That sounds like a long time to stay in a boat. But there was so much that happened to the earth in 150 days of being underwater. It's hard for us to visualize it all. Lord, help us to not ignore the wisdom that's crying in the street. Where's the proof? You want somebody to come along and say, well, we found the cross that Jesus was crucified on, so now we believe. I don't need that. We've been counting years since he showed up anyway. I don't need the cross. We've been dividing our time into weeks, in 7-day weeks since the creation. God put something in order, and whether you want to accept it or not, we've been doing it a really long time. And we've been doing it so long, people are confused as to when it started. All they got to do is read the first page, and they'll know. It's wisdom crying in the street. You know, I wonder how this fossil of this prehistoric mammal and this 40 million year old dinosaur got together in the same silt bed. Well, I wonder. You know, there was this thing called the flood, and things were floating around in places they shouldn't have been floating around. There was the highest hill was covered by 15 cubits. They wasn't nothing that tall. I don't know how tall a giraffe is, but I'm pretty sure it's not 15 cubits. Even a giraffe couldn't stand on the highest hill and keep his head out of water. Lord, help us to not fall into the trap of saying, you know, if they could only find the tomb and they could only find the nail that they drove in Jesus' hand, if somebody would come and tell me they finally uncovered part of the veil of the old temple, and you know, they also found the Ark of the Covenant, so I believe now. Lord, have mercy. There's wisdom crying in the street that God is real, that Jesus is here for us today. Lord, help us not to ignore it. You pray for me.